several people came out and protested in front of the parliament in Tehran. They included workers' rights activists and some prominent activists, and including reporters. And more than 20 people were arrested, including one prominent labor rep unionist. His name is Reza Shahabi. He has been released on bail, but a reporter from a reformist newspaper who was covering the protests was detained reportedly after she went to a detention center to ask about the detained workers. Her name is Marzieh Amiri. She worked for the Sharg reformist newspaper, and she remains in detention. They are all being held without access to counsel, and it's not clear on what charges or when they're going to be released. The context of these protests is that, you know, protests have been happening in Iran since 2016, 2017, particularly after the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal and the reimposition of sanctions and blocking of Iran's access to the international banking system. So the economy is shrinking, inflation is rising. The currency, the rial, has lost nearly 70% of its value against the U.S. dollar, and people are basically struggling to make ends meet. And workers in particular are seeing that their wages are not being paid on time, they're losing their wages, and so basically they're demanding that the government tend to these many problems.
So as the inflation was getting higher the last year, how in comparison, how big have the protests for the 1st of May been?
Well, the thing is, there are protests every year, and they might seem small. So you could say like several hundred, maybe 1,000 people. But we have to remember that in Iran, protests are a very risky endeavor. Security agents will come out to repress them. Some of them will be in just normal clothes, and others will be in, you know, military or police uniforms. And people have the risk of being shot or detained for simply peacefully protesting. So those who do go out are very brave. And it should be noted that protests are happening all over the country. So this was in Tehran in front of parliament, but in the south of the country in a place called Khuzestan province, outside of Iran's biggest sugar mill, protests have been going on for the past three years, where workers have been working and not receiving their wages. Sometimes 6 months, 8 months, they're not paid. And a prominent trade unionist by the name of Esmail Bakhshi has been in prison since January after he went on social media on Instagram and noted that he'd been tortured by agents of the intelligence ministry. Another reporter, an independent reporter, her name is Sepideh Golyan. She's also in the same detention center that they have accused of committing this torture. So they're happening all over the country, and they don't seem to be abating, even though the authorities are trying very hard to repress them.
And concerning these protests at the sugar mill, did the workers achieve anything?
No, the situation is ongoing. Obviously, the owners of the company feel the pressure. But of course, on the other hand, they're also struggling importing materials needed and just basically accessing currency to pay the workers. But they're not stopping operations, and they're letting the workers continue to work without being paid. It's a pretty dark situation right now.
And also before May Day, the authorities already arrested some unionists. So that is something where you can see how the government tries to suppress these activities. What do you know about like the atmosphere between workers? Are they like really angry, or are they very afraid of the authorities?
So yeah, always before like a big day like Labor Day, the government often makes arrests. People are just in their homes or something, and they will go and arrest people with big profiles to kind of prevent them from coming out. And that's totally illegal because there's no cause for the arrest. And basically, unions and labor rep leaders have a lot of difficulty, you know, engaging in peaceful protests in Iran, because the Iranian government views any kind of organized group that demands its rights as a threat to the state and treats it as a national security threat. So they will arrest labor rep union leaders, you know, for doing things like handing out flyers or standing inside on the street and holding up signs. And then they will sentence them to lengthy prison terms. There's one labor rep unionist, trade unionist. His name is Ismail Abdi. And he has been in prison for the last 3 years, serving a 6-year prison sentence. He's actually a teachers' rights labor unionist. So it's a bit of a revolving door. Sometimes they're released and then other ones go in. And this is kind of the way that the government deals with these unions instead of just sitting down and listening to them.
You told me that also some journalists got arrested during May Day, and there have been international demands for freeing these journalists. How are the experiences with these international demands? Previously, did the government react to such pleas?
It engages with the United Nations when the United Nations makes statements. There's a correspondence that happens between Iran and the United Nations. And sometimes there is movement on it. It just kind of depends on what the government feels like doing. But as far as the situation for journalists goes, a lot of people don't know that in Iran, it's only state media, state-funded outlets that are allowed to operate. And if these outlets are seen as, you know, operating outside the lines that the government has set for them, sometimes they're shut down, the reporters are arrested. And again, they can be sentenced to lengthy prison terms simply for writing articles or making statements on social media. So it's important that the international community, and actually Germany, which is one of the signatories to the Iranian nuclear deal, that when they engage with Iranian officials, that they speak up for these rights, for these people. By failing to speak up when they engage with, for example, the German foreign minister meets his Iranian counterpart, if they don't speak out for these rights, they're basically emboldening and strengthening the people on the far right that want to continue these arrests with impunity and no accountability. And they weaken the people that the German government, for example, wants to negotiate with. So it's very important that international community continues to speak out against this repression.
So international communities do have power in changing something for activists in Iran. To talk a bit more about the situation for journalists in Iran, I've seen at Amnesty International that there is, of course, many journalists in jail, but also more who have been working for citizen media. Could you tell me more about the reasons for this?
That's a really good point, actually, that because state media has so many restrictions and they're so severely censored in what they can report and what they can say and the kind of questions that they can ask officials, there are a lot of kind of independent journalists, people that are using their phones to capture video and pictures and reporting things on social media. And they can be very important sources that even the state-funded media might turn to, that they might reference because they themselves can't say, you know, what those people are saying. And so that journalist that I mentioned, the one in the south of the country in Khuzestan province, Sepide Qulian, she's a freelance journalist. And she was simply covering the protests that have been happening at this sugar mill. And she was detained along with several activists. And one of them was the trade unionist, Ismail Bakhshi. After Ismail Bakhshi went on Instagram and said that he had been tortured by these agents in the intelligence ministry, this was after his first arrest in November, Ms. Qulian corroborated his account and said, yes, I heard him screaming. I saw what happened. And so they've both been taken in, silenced, and put inside a detention center that's run by the same ministry that they've accused of torturing them. Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to report on Iran, but it's very important that these brave journalists are going out and engaging in this kind of citizen journalism.
So I guess institutions like your institution do an important role for reporting on things that are going on in Iran.
Right. Yeah. So we operate the Center for Human Rights in Iran. We operate in Persian and English. you know, lots of very big social media accounts that we run. And one of our jobs is kind of to amplify voices that are within Iran. So when people are protesting or there's been an arrest, we will get in touch with families, report on the situation, the case details, talk to their lawyers, and get all that information online. So people inside Iran and then, you know, advocates inside the UN and other rights organizations can become informed about these cases and reach out to Iranian officials to demand the release of, you know, detained activists.
Maybe as a final question, a very big question, what is your perspective on what could happen that the situation in Iran gets better?
Well, that's a very complicated question because there's multiple forces at play here. So on one hand, we have Iran's dealings with the international community. After the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal, Iran saw a lot of the promises of an improved economy kind of fall through. And that's what we're seeing right now with these kind of protests. Most of them have been fueled by important kind of economic concerns. People are unable to get jobs, high youth unemployment, high unemployment for educated people. People that do have jobs are not getting paid on time. The value of the currency is so low that it caused sort of a rush for people to get foreign currencies. And then a lot of trading on the black market. It's a bit of a chaotic situation and people are struggling and they're worrying about their future. On the other hand, there's the government and it has also been blamed for mismanagement of funds, placing money into kind of foreign issues rather than in domestic issues. Iran is not at its knees yet, as some in, you know, Washington would hope. And how it will get by now that the U.S. has announced that it won't be renewing oil waivers. So, you know, the U.S. pulled out of the nuclear deal, but it said some countries could still import oil from Iran. And now the U.S. is saying in a few months it's not going to allow those countries to import the oil either. Iran needs to find a way to stimulate its economy domestically. And it's going to be a very difficult thing without access to state funds, without access to oil revenues. So, yeah, I mean, no one would have a very good projection for Iran. The IMF is projecting that the economy is going to shrink by another 3%. It's already shrunk by 6% compared to last year. So things are not looking good. Something big has to happen if things are supposed to get better.
What is your perspective on the US sanctions? Do you think they are a good instrument or do you think they just maybe are worsening the conditions for people living in Iran?
So that's our primary concern are the conditions of the people in Iran. And certainly they are worsening the conditions of the people in Iran while the government is continuing to do what it normally does. In 2012, when President Obama was in the presidency and the U.S. imposed big sanctions then, the Revolutionary Guards, which is sort of an elite branch of the army, was able to exploit those sanctions and kind of take control of various branches of the economy. If you speak to Iranian people, they are adamantly against the sanctions. They say that the sanctions hurt them and not the government. And there needs to be mechanisms implemented, financial mechanisms that enable Iran to access banks and goods, food, medicine. We saw with the recent floods that aid organizations were, you know, having trouble receiving money to take to do just kind of the normal work that you would do in a disaster zone because Iran is blocked from accessing banks from the financial system because of sanctions. So whatever the political issue is, the countries all have to get together and make sure that mechanisms are in place so that average Iranians are not hurt by sanctions.
So a very complicated and complex situation you are telling me about. Would you like to add something that is important for you?
The most important thing is, you know, speaking to a German station, I think that it's important for everyone to understand that conflicts and issues might seem very far away. So Iranian people might be protesting in front of the parliament and get arrested. And then, you know, we're living our lives as normal in our day to day. But they are all interconnected. We should all stand together. When people are going into the streets, standing in front of guns and demanding their rights, we should listen. And the German government actually has a lot of leverage with Iran. Iran depends on Germany for its types of investments. investments and for the support of the nuclear deal. And the German government is often silent on issues pertaining to rights-based issues inside Iran. It would be useful if Germans, you know, demanded that we demand the same rights for Iranian people and other people in other countries as we do for ourselves. That's the way that we can strengthen people's movements worldwide.